Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Today will be a pop culture edition. I know there's all kinds of stuff going on in the news, but it's also good to break things up and lighten things up a little. I am very passionate about the arts, and good art not only entertains, it makes statements about human nature that can be applied to the times we live in. So we will get some of that reflection again today, but for today, mostly, a brief review. A new movie produced on Amazon called Being the Ricardos. As any television buff knows, or at least anybody of a certain age knows, this would be the story of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, their life before and during the sitcom that basically created sitcoms as we know them today, I Love Lucy. But before I review the film, if you'll indulge me, I'd like to review the title. Yes, the title. It's the latest in a series of present tense titles, and they drive me crazy. Saving Mr. Banks, Finding Forrester, Chasing Amy, Desperately Seeking Susan, Surviving Christmas, to name only a few. There's lots more. Somebody out there really thinks they're being clever. So before I go on, let me comment for a moment on this popular title fashion. Those kinds of titles sounded okay when the first one or two broke out because back then they were original. But they lose their steam and they lose their charm and they lose their originality with too many imitators. I'll give Samuel Beckett credit with his play Waiting for Godot. And of course, years later, I was okay with Desperately Seeking Susan or Chasing Amy. Still fresh, still original, at least to the decades following Godot. But by the time Finding Forrester came out, it was getting old. Even that was a long time ago, but it hasn't stopped. Now, ironically, a lot of those films were creative and unique. Not Surviving Christmas with Ben Affleck, not that one, but the others. I loved Saving Mr. Banks, the story of Walt Disney trying to get the film rights of the book Mary Poppins from the author P.L. Travers. A wonderful film, first-rate performances from Tom Hanks and Emma Thompson. How sad when creative films all jump on the uncreative, imitative fashion bandwagon for titles. Anyway, back to Saving the Ricardos. The title may not have been creative, but the film itself was excellent. Admittedly, I'm biased. I am a big fan of I Love Lucy, having grown up on this as a kid. Of course, by my time, I was already grown up on the reruns. Getting to stay home from school for being sick became equated with daily morning I Love Lucy reruns. So there was already something pleasant in my mind. I didn't have to be in school this morning. Yeah, I was sick, but at least I wasn't in school. By the way, I did get to interview the actor who played the part of Little Ricky in the series. You can still listen to that podcast, half of which recalled his experience with I Love Lucy, and half of which Keith, the actor, shares his own Christian testimony. But let me tell you something. Even if you remember nothing about I Love Lucy, you will find this a fascinating film. It's extremely well written, with funny, sharp, punched-up dialogue. It's also incredibly interesting. A slice of American life from the 1950s. It should immediately catch the attention of anyone interested in history, and especially anyone interested in television and film history. The film combines two plots and plays on two levels, both enjoyable, both interesting. It begins with one production schedule week in the making of a single I Love Lucy episode, from script reading to rehearsals. Each day is labeled on the screen: Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We're progressing with them through the week. And that alone is fascinating to watch, as we see the writers, actors, directors, producers, sponsors. Sponsors were much more involved in the program back in those days. And the network heads, of course. They're all interacting with each other, often at odds with each other, which makes for great drama and great humor in places. But the immediate hook, which draws us in right away, is that this production schedule was going on against the backdrop of the McCarthy era. Lucille Ball had been accused of being a communist. She was not. But to please her grandfather when she was very young, she had once voted communist. It was many years prior, and this was now coming out in the midst of a witch hunt. Ironically, real honest-to-goodness communists today are trying to take over our country, and of course some were then as well, but this shameful time in our history became a witch hunt laced with guilt by association and limits on free speech. I say this carefully because a true communist, if he gets his way, would abolish our Constitution. So he uses the First Amendment right of free speech to speak out against America, and America which he would abolish, including the Constitution, including the First Amendment that he's using at the moment. It is quite a paradox, to be sure. But like so many other situations with life, you have the pure evil people with their pure evil intentions, and then you get those who innocently get caught up in a movement. They want to be fair. They want to share with the poor. They listen to socialism and its ideals, and they think it's a good thing. They feel this way innocently. They may be deceived. They are not criminals. They should not be treated as criminals. They should not ever have been put out of work. In Lucy's own words, and she says this in the movie, "I once checked a box. That is my entire history with the Communist Party." And so they are wondering all week if by the end of the week they will even have a show on the air anymore. The Ways and Means Committee had actually already cleared her, and things had been kept under wraps, or so they thought. But then, and this is happening very early in the movie, a popular radio personality who somehow got wind of the situation says something over the air as if the accusation against Lucille Ball were true. Fortunately, as the week progresses, no other news outlets seem to be picking up the story, but obviously everyone is on pins and needles, knowing the shoe could drop at any moment, so very suspenseful. Irony of ironies, Desi Arnaz himself came to America to flee from situations in Cuba that, while not yet communist, seemed headed a direction very much like that. He hated communism. He loved America. Just imagine how it must have made him feel to have an innocent wife accused of an ideology he viewed as downright evil. The other story in this film is a flashback about how Lucy and Desi had met. Few remember today that she had been a star in many B-movies before going into television. Desi, of course, was a talented band leader and handsome womanizing band leader at that, but he and Lucy fell in love and got married. Sadly, I Love Lucy was a project developed together in order to spend more time with each other and save their marriage, an idea that did not end up accomplishing such a goal. Now, many today, many in our time, will criticize I Love Lucy because she made fun of her husband's Spanish accent when he spoke English. Lucy doing that to Ricky was a recurring joke. The audience thought it was hysterical. This, of course, is a completely taboo routine in our PC culture, which has become, incidentally, a McCarthy era of its own. Some historical perspective is in order. First, the sponsors and networks did not want originally a sitcom with a white woman married to an Hispanic, so there was originally racism to contend with. But the rest of the story is Lucy told them that without Desi, there would be no show, and she was the one they were trying to court. And so, my friends, keep that in mind the next time you want to scream racism without knowing what you're talking about. This was a groundbreaking show against racism. And the next thing to consider, sometimes a joke or imitation is just funny. Can we admit this? I mean, who are we kidding? I myself am Jewish. I have often myself done impersonations of rabbis. Should I get bent out of shape if others do the same? One of my favorite routines from Saturday Night Live was John Lovitz as Hanukkah Harry, Santa's counterpart, who brings toys to Jewish girls and boys the 8 nights of Hanukkah. Instead of reindeer, his sleigh is carried by donkeys, Moshe, Herschel, and Shlomo. And then you hear him in that Yiddish accent. Tommy, for you, slacks. They're a little big, but you'll grow into them. Now look, if someone is making sport of a Yiddish accent out of a hatred for Jewish people, or making sport out of an Hispanic accent out of a hatred for the Latin culture, hatred, or just their own stupid bigotry, that is different. But if someone is just trying to be funny, well, if it's funny, it's funny. We need to lighten up, not just about imitations, about all humor. Comedians like Jerry Seinfeld won't even tour college campuses anymore. Nobody is laughing. Everybody is so sensitive. Everybody is offended. But in its day, I Love Lucy was simply funny. Stores would close on Monday nights because store owners knew nobody was shopping. Everyone was staying home watching I Love Lucy. Ladies and gentlemen, I give this movie an A-. The minus is only for minor observations. Nicole Kidman was great. She's a terrific actor. She was good as Lucy. She certainly got her facial expressions down, although too exaggerated at times. And Javier Bardem playing Desi at times looked nothing like Desi, but other times looked a lot like him. It was weird. His acting was first rate either way. And at first I thought Nina Arianda as Vivian Vance, Ethel, and J.K. Simmons as William Frawley, Fred, looked nothing like their characters, but in time these actors were so convincing, my imagination took over. I thought I was staring at Vivian Vance and William Frawley. I was captivated by both stories, the flashback and the week of rehearsal. The flashback would have worked better as one long flashback instead of the constant jumping back and forth. They could have hooked us in, reminding us of the McCarthy-era accusation, then switched to the flashback in one fell swoop, catching up with where Lucy and Desi were, and then returning us to the production week story. But then, that might have inspired a subtitle. Catching up with Desi and Lucy. Listen, I'm not saying flashbacks don't work. They can be very effective. I use them all the time in the novels I write, and I was inspired by novels I read that would occasionally stop to inform us more about a character with a flashback. And each particular story told in flashback form concluded before going back to the main plot. In this case, in this film, by constantly jumping back and forth with the alternative stories, past and present, taking turns, it got kind of confusing at times. All in all, however, I strongly recommend this movie. I would have enjoyed it in an actual theater, too. Well, I might have enjoyed it before theaters had instructions on wearing your mask and taking it off only between bites if you're enjoying the concessions they sell you, but that is a review I have already provided on other radio shows. Being the Ricardos gets an A with a very small minus due to the editing of the flashbacks and a few other things I mentioned, but again, it's a very, very small minus. The movie did work splendidly. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious. Obvious.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.